You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Somehow made it to a Friday. We got wings on the Traeger. It's going to be a good day. Glad you're part of the program. If you're listening, you're watching, email, tweeting, all of the above. Say good morning to our TV partner, Peacock, and you great radio listeners around the country, numbering 362 cities in America. Got a poll question, play of the day, a couple of stats of the day that have to do with Patrick Mahomes, and a stat of the day that has to do with James Harden. But football last night, a lot of fun. As strange as this NFL season already is, it was business as usual for the Chiefs last night. Picked up where they left off, made it look easy. It was 34-20, beating the Texans. And there are a couple of differences. The biggest difference is Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of LSU, and also the fact that Andy Reid was wearing a fogged-over face shield. And I'm not sure what Andy saw or didn't see last night, but it was all good for Kansas City and bad for Houston because they couldn't get their defense off the field. I don't want to hear, boy, Texans certainly missed DeAndre Hopkins. You could have paid him if you wanted to, so make up your mind. Oh, you got to spread the ball now. You get to spread the ball to the other wide receivers. I was listening to the NBC pregame show, and I'm going, are you kidding me? Chris Sims and Rodney Harrison are actually trying to say this? Hey, you know, Deshaun Watson, he gets to open up the offense and spread it around. Boy, I'd love to have a receiver that I can go to who I know is always going to be open. And then Tony Dungy finally came in and said, look, I would have traded me before I would have traded Marvin Harrison. Now, I know you can go back through history and say, how many times has an all-pro wide receiver been on a team that won the Super Bowl? It's not very often. You know, Jerry Rice was one. Gary Clark played for Washington. Lynn Swan, John Stallworth, I think, with the Steelers. It doesn't happen very often. But let's make up our mind. Do we need an all-pro go-to wide receiver or not? Well, Brady didn't need that. And when he had Randy Moss, they didn't win the Super Bowl. I know. I understand all of that. But all of a sudden, DeAndre Hopkins had nothing to do with the defense not getting off the field. The defense looks really suspect, and so does J.J. Watt. He looked average last night. Now, I know we didn't have any preseason. It's one game. You're playing against Kansas City Chiefs. But Kansas City was great. Now, that offense, they do what they want to do when they want to do it. Yes, Eden.
What did you just say?
I said that J.J. was average last night.
Were you watching the same game?
I was. Maybe not the same game Chris Collinsworth was watching, but I thought J.J. looked average last night.
Looked? Like looks?
Well, no.
Because he looked good. His hair looked great.
He played.
Do you see his triceps in the pregame?
Played average.
Oh, played. Okay. You know,
Paulie takes pictures. He does these screen grabs, and then he'll send us these pictures of J.J. Watt in warm-ups. And I go, stop. Let me see how he looks in the game. By the way, this program brought to you by LegalZoom, LegalZoom.com. Take care of the things you need to get done without having to leave your home. That's LegalZoom.com. But it was a statement win for the Chiefs. I know we were talking about, revenge match for the Texans against the Chiefs. No. A revenge match would be in January when it truly matters, not in September. Yes, McLovin.
When they were up 7-0, I was like, yes, the revenge match has started. I was right. And then they didn't score again for about 40 minutes.
And then David Johnson, who came over to the Texans from Arizona, is like, yeah, that's why they traded DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins doesn't play defense. So if DeAndre Hopkins was on the field last night, the final score probably still would have been 34-20. But that road back to the Super Bowl certainly looks like it would go through Kansas City with the offense there. And the defense is really what I'm keeping an eye on, because there will be times when Kansas City will not be putting up those points and they're going to have to rely on their defense. It may be one or two games. It may be in the playoffs. It may be in a quarter or a half. The defense is going to have to play great. But last night, you saw Patrick Mahomes sort of ho-hum. And, you know, the other thing is they were running the football. This is something that we have not seen from a team with Patrick Mahomes, because Kansas City's offense looked different last night. They had 34 rushing attempts. That's the most in any game started by Mahomes. And Mahomes had no completions of 20 or more yards for just the second time in his career, but he did throw for three touchdowns.
Stat of the day, stat of the day, tap tap. Stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes that what? Stat of the day.
But I thought the star was the, you know, the rookie out of LSU. And go back to the draft. When we came in following that weekend, and people wondered, well, Kansas City already has a running back who performed well in the Super Bowl, and you're going to take Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And we said, this is a luxury item. This is when somebody falls into your lap and you go, we got to take him. Like, we, this isn't like the Packers. They traded up to get Jordan Love. Kansas City said, we probably don't need him, but let's take him. And then when Kansas City's running back, when Williams opted out, then all of a sudden they, you know, didn't miss anything. In fact, they gained something because Edwards-Helaire is a better running back all around. And you saw that, and he's cheap. First round pick, you got him. He has, you know, you got him locked up for a few years here, and Kansas City needs a couple of bargains considering they've been paying everybody else, but you know, they're a good team, a good offense, and I think that it'll be interesting to see how teams are going to try to match up with them because they can run the football, and they showed that last night, although I wasn't too impressed with what I saw with the Texans defense. Sean Salisbury, who does a sports show in Houston on Sports Talk 790, former NFL quarterback, will join us coming up. Chris Fowler from the Mothership will stop by, and final hour today, we pay a visit to Vin Scully. Get some thoughts on Vin. Vin, we spoke to him yesterday. He has cleared out all his memorabilia and going to put that up for auction. So we'll take a trip down memory lane with Vin Scully. Final hour of the show. So Chiefs over the Texans, 34-20. Lakers go up 3-1 on the Rockets. The Nuggets, Clips, Celtics, Raptors. That's tonight. And you got football coming up this weekend. North Carolina. You got Oklahoma, Clemson, Texas, Central Florida among the teams that are in action. As far as the Lakers, you can watch a game and go, this wasn't the series clinching win, but it felt like that last night. I mean, it was up, the Lakers go up 3-1. I would have thought that this was 4-1. James Harden didn't have a field goal attempt in the fourth quarter. He didn't make one. He didn't take one. 2 of 11 from the floor. Here's a stat that I found out this morning from The Ringer. In the last 5 years, in the postseason, in the fourth quarter and overtime, James Harden is shooting less than 25% from three-point range. It's a pattern. They have an offense, a style that is not sustainable during the postseason. Yet they went out and got Russell Westbrook and kicked Chris Paul to the curb and bought into that style even more so than they had the previous year. Maybe they salvaged another win out of this, but what I saw last night, I didn't think the Lakers, I thought it was a good team effort. And Rajon Rondo's a really big key. He's a really big key for that team. And Anthony Davis has played extremely well. LeBron sort of had to go through the motions, you know, hey, 16 points, 15 rebounds, 9 assists. Like, okay. But watching the Rockets last night, it was not a good night for Houston last night. Let's put it that way. Because both teams didn't, Texans and Rockets weren't good on offense. But James Harden, trying to figure that out. And it may be too late to figure that out. You know, we had this break. We had a 4-month break. That's where James Harden should have been reinvigorated. Remember, we saw these off-season reports, you know, during the pandemic when everything was shut down? Oh, he's in the best shape of his life. And I went, okay, all right. And then all of a sudden I'm watching him, and I'll give a little bit of credit to the Lakers with their defensive philosophy. I think Frank Vogel has quietly done a brilliant job with the Lakers this year. And quiet is the key word there. There's no drama, and he's done a great job. And defensively, with what they were drawing up with James Harden, and he just doesn't look like he's enthusiastic. I'm not saying he's quitting. It just doesn't look energized, enthused, something about it. And, this is going to be quick and painless out the door. If they don't put up a fight here, the final game. Yes, Tom.
And LeBron made sure to make a point that it's only the ninth playoff game together for this young group. And so they were only getting better. He feels like, you know, they've got another level to take it to beyond what they showed yesterday.
But LeBron did have a criticism of the Lakers. He had this to say following the win last night.
Obviously, we got to be better. We got to close out games the right way. You know, we get a big lead. We got to be able to, you know, continue to defend and continue to put the pressure on their defense and not allow them to get back into the game like we did. We started to give up, you know, some threes. We started to give up, you know, some fouls in the backcourt when we were in the penalty. And allowing them to score without the time running. So we'll be better. We'll watch the film. We'll be better.
Yeah, you know, they're starting to bring it together a little bit here. And you're starting to get contributions from other players. And you're going to need a balanced attack. I mean, you're going to need LeBron and Anthony Davis to be great. We know that. If Rondo can be playoff Rondo, and now all of a sudden I just ask one of those other role players to step up and do more than you normally do, then the Lakers are going to be the team to beat. But trying to get that, make it all work, the Clippers are still trying to figure out, you know, being consistent. See, we get so spoiled. When I look at James Harden, and you know what I think of him offensively, I think he's one of the, you know, most unstoppable players I've ever seen. But he does stop himself. It's rare that a defender stops him. I think James Harden stops himself. We get spoiled with watching Kawhi and LeBron, because they're so good at what they do. And on a big stage, big moment, they play big. They get larger. James Harden seems to get smaller. And that's where you look at Kawhi and how brilliant he is, and he makes it look effortless. And so does LeBron. But these are two intelligent basketball players. And so is Rondo. Like, Rondo's IQ is right there with LeBron. And to have that on the floor where you're figuring things out, and James Harden hasn't figured, I don't know if he's figured himself out when it comes to the postseason. And you can be great in December. You can be great in January. But James Harden has to be great during the postseason. And I just, you know, every year I go, they can't win 4 out of 7 games because they can't be consistent enough. And I don't know what kind of changes you make. Feels like they're all in on small ball. Does Mike D'Antoni want to continue coaching this team? And while it's great during the regular season, postseason, there's a lot of question marks here. Yeah, McLovin.
Is it more mental or physical? Because he looks out of shape. You know, I was thinking LeBron spends $1 million on his body a year. Yeah. James Harden spends $1 million elsewhere. Don't make me say where.
Whoa.
Wow.
Widely reported that he spent $1 million in one night this summer. I mean, everybody talked about that. You know, I'm saying James Harden does not spend $1 million.
Wait. Harden spent $1 million?
In one night in a strip club, yeah. He had his jersey retired.
Allegedly,
according to 45 reports.
Wait, he had his jersey retired in the strip club?
Yeah.
Do they hang it in the... How do they retire your jersey in the strip club?
I don't know.
In the rafters?
And he's always... And also, he makes a lot of jokes about that. He's like kind of like laid back about that. It's not like something that he's like hiding. But he doesn't. He's not in shape. He looks exhausted out there, and he always fades shooting wise in the playoffs.
Well, just that stat alone, the last 5 years, you're shooting 25%, less than 25% from 3-point range, fourth quarter, and overtime in playoff games. Yeah, Paul.
That club has a ring of honor. It's James Harden, Tiffany. Go on from there. Some of the legends.
Cinnamon.
Yeah.
It was actually just the wings. You spent $1 million on the wings in that place. It wasn't what you're thinking. It was just they have really good food and
Cardi B.
And just go there for the food.
Of course they do. All right, what's poll question today, McLovin?
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you, after watching the Chiefs last night, do you want a mulligan on your Super Bowl pick?
No.
Did it cross your mind? Did you pick the Ravens?
It's easy to pick the Chiefs. I pick the Ravens. It's easy to pick the Chiefs. They can be great during the regular season. All it takes is one game in the postseason, and that's what I'm banking on, that the Ravens, when they face the Chiefs, that one game will be better than the Chiefs. Chiefs will probably be better during the regular season. But I could see where the Ravens could have 14 wins. Chiefs could have 14 wins this year. It can happen because how great they are, and looking at their schedules, I don't think it will happen, but you know, there's a chance for a real special season from both of those teams. But no, I do watch, and, you know, last year when I picked Kansas City to win it all, I'm watching those games in the postseason. They're trailing by double digits. They're trailing by 10 in the Super Bowl with 7 minutes to go. They're down 24-0 to the Texans. That's when I was getting nervous about my Super Bowl pick. Not now. Yeah, McLeod.
Okay, what was the biggest takeaway from last night? Andy Reid's face mask that took over social media. CeeLo, as Paulie is calling him, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Having some fans in the stands. Bill O'Brien screwing up everything. Punting from the 50. Wow. Running all over the place for no reason every time he got the ball. Or I was going to say Frank Clark running past Titus Howard that one time. That was terrifying. But Deshaun Watson, they got to protect him a little bit. I mean, you've been saying that for a while.
I just hope he doesn't end up like Andrew Luck. I've said that from day one when he became a starter. He's a great talent, but if you don't have a great offensive line there, as the Colts found out, like running should be a choice for a quarterback. Not, I'm trying to avoid extinction here. And when I watch Deshaun, he takes way too many hits. Now, some of that is get rid of the ball. These guys are all about their stats, completion percentage, and, hey, I don't want to throw it away, throw an ill-advised pass. Running should be a choice for a quarterback, and for Deshaun Watson, it's not. My takeaway is probably Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because we knew he was special. In fact, who were we talking to? Joe Burrow. And I said, who was the best player on the team? And he had no hesitation. He said, Clyde is a freak. And if you go back to those playoff games, national title game, he was best player on the field, I thought. I mean, Joe's had a wonderful season. There's very few guys like Clyde Edwards-Helaire in college football. And by all accounts, if you can't just gear up to stop him, you got Patrick Mahomes doing what he wants to do, and then you have that great luxury where you just say, I can use you out of the backfield, and you run the ball. Man, that's pretty impressive. That's pretty potent. When the best offense in football got even better in the offseason, that's pretty scary. Yeah, Paul.
They were showing replays of CeeLo at halftime, and I think it was Collins were saying, first the defender has to find him and then find a way to tackle him. He's like, Leonard Fournette, you don't have to find. Bigger running backs, you don't have to find. Derrick Henry, you still have to tackle him, but you don't have to find the guy.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Sean Salisbury about what he saw last night with the Texans against Kansas City Chiefs. We'll also hear from Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. I felt bad for him because he was fogging up his mask there, and he looked like he was out of some kind of moon landing unit or something. And you could just tell, if I could have heard him, you probably heard, and then it would just fog up. So I think he would call a play, and then he probably didn't even know what happened on the play. He'd be like, X right, banana Y, two, okay. Yes, Todd.
And there was some dried up mac and cheese on the corner if you looked really
close. That is not true.
I'm not one to talk. That's a cheap shot.
Yeah, that is. And of all people,
exactly.
You
Who
with a cheap shot.
I could lose a few.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Sean Salisbury, morning host of the Sean Salisbury Show on Sports Talk 790, Houston, former NFL quarterback. Yeah, that probably precludes us from getting Patrick Mahomes on this season when Fritzy does his impersonation. What did you think of his impersonation, by the way, of Patrick Mahomes?
I thought it sucked, and that's the only But I love, hey, it's a heck of an effort by Fritzy. How you guys doing, Dan?
Oh, we're doing great. Hey, how about them Texans?
Think about the yesterday in Houston sports. The Astros couldn't hold a one-run lead ever. This season, miserable on the road. Every single game the Rockets play in, we're asking this question: hey, are you guys going to give effort? And why so flat? Oh, it's only the playoffs, but let's not worry about that. And then the Texans, who right now, Dan, of the three, they're your best chance to win the Super Bowl. I mean, a championship. And they ran into a team that looked like, well, we'll play about 75%. We won't break a sweat. Patrick Mahomes' jersey will still be clean for next week, and they win. So not a good day for Houston sports. I think the Texans are going to be fine. I'm not panicked about them, but if their defense doesn't get better, Dan, they not only got to pace Lamar, they got to go Ben Roethlisberger and Kirk Cousins, all four of those guys in the first month. They could actually be a pretty decent team and be 1-3 or 0-4, but the Chiefs are at a different level than everybody else, and now adding Allaire, it's frightening.
And I was looking at the Texans last night. As much as we want to go, boy, they missed DeAndre Hopkins, and I said, he's not playing defense.
Like right.
The defense was on the field for 9 minutes in one of those drives. You're not winning games like that.
Yeah, what was it, Dan? 17 plays. If you can't get off the field, it won't matter. There's enough burden on Deshaun Watson anyway, Dan. You know, the great quarterbacks in the league bear that burden, and they know it. But Deshaun could score 31 points, and if you run into Breeze, Brady, Mahomes, Russ Wilson, you give up 38, it's not going to matter. So think about that burden he has to carry. Hell, look at Mahomes last night. What did he throw for? A little over 200 yards. He had a run game. Defense played well. He didn't have to be special, and they still yawned their way to 38 points. Watson's going to hang 30 a week because the back end's not very good. And Dan, I don't know where they're going to generate pressure on the quarterback. You know, some teams can do it with 4 and 5, but then if you all of a sudden say, well, we got to start rushing 5 and 6 and you don't get to the quarterback, even I with Andy Reid's face mask on and can't see, might've been able to complete a few balls. Now you get the great quarterbacks at the elite level. It's going to be a rough one, but this is a good team. No reason to panic, but it is a rough schedule to start, and Deshaun Watson will give them a chance every game, but that defense will not get them out of January.
And I know that, you know, we go back and forth where people say, you don't need to have that marquee wide receiver, an all-pro wide receiver, you know, Marvin Harrison with the Colts to win a title, Isaac Bruce with the Rams in 1999, Jerry Rice, Gary Clark with the Redskins. Those are the all-pro wide receivers on a team that won the Super Bowl. It just doesn't happen. But then – do you want to pay these wide receivers? Like DeAndre Hopkins cost a lot of money, but is he worth, like, I don't know where the value of wide receivers, I know how we feel about running backs, but where are we with wide receivers? Do you need a great wide receiver, an all pro, or do you just need, you know, five guys that go out there and play?
If I can have a great wide receiver and then have John Taylor, Tom Rathman, Roger Craig, Joe Montana, I'm pretty good, right, Dan?
Yeah.
I can take any good defensive coordinator, usually. Their thought process is, and Belichick's thought this, you know, has been like this whole time, you give me one, I can take your best player, not named a quarterback, out of the game. I should be able to, right? So I subscribe to the fact that if you give me three good ones or one great one, I'm taking the three good ones. So you look at the Texans, I'll use them for example. They've got guys with Fuller and Cooks and Cobb that are pretty good. Yes, we all want that crutch to lean on. But, Dan, I would – listen, I don't blame any – you're worth what you can negotiate. I don't blame anybody for going and getting their money. I would not pay a receiver $22 million because I'm going to tell you now, who's closer to the Super Bowl, the Texans without Hopkins or the Cardinals with him? Today. I'm talking about today. Who's closer?
Texans are, but neither is getting to the Super Bowl.
Amen. And that was the second half of it. Put it this way. Are the Arizona Cardinals four games better? I think Hopkins is the best receiver in the league. Are they four games or three games better because of Hopkins? No, because if their defense doesn't play better, guess what's going to happen? The Seahawks and the 49ers are going to roll right through them. They'll stay in games. Why? Because they've got Kyler Murray and you've got DeAndre Hopkins. And here in Houston. So, Dan, I think that, you know, how many Super Bowls has Julio Jones in Atlanta won with a great player?
Yeah.
I mean, you make the point. So I think that we're almost to the point where we're going to devalue that price, even though the price keeps going up. We're not putting a premium on saying, well, a great receiver is winning me a Super Bowl. You better have a rush end. You better have a tackle. And you better have a quarterback. If you don't have those three, you're probably not playing in February.
How did the Chiefs not win the Super Bowl, or at least go to the Super Bowl this year?
For me would be major injuries or something to Mahomes, which is the obvious. I think that's the case with all the teams that are at the top of the level, top of the heap. And, you know, somebody like Lamar Jackson or Brady or Breeze in the NFC playing them. I would think that the way they're not going to get there, significant amount of injuries. They're a team that can score 40. They can hang 40 on your regular basis. running into a team that has less injuries and has a quarterback that's on par, maybe not Patrick Mahomes, but can carry their team for a month. But to me, they would have to play awfully bad football. I think at 90%, they're probably better than every team in football right now. And now you add Edwards-Helaire and a better defense, and they're hungry. I think they think that winning number two is more important than winning number one, and that's a good thing. It's very difficult to do. But I think they're going to have to beat themselves, and Andy Reid's teams don't do that very often in Kansas City. They're the heavy favorite, in my opinion.
He's Sean Salisbury. He's the former NFL quarterback and host of the Sean Salisbury Show on Sports Talk Radio 790 in Houston. I picked the Ravens against the Cowboys in the Super Bowl.
Can I ask why the Cowboys?
I don't know. I just kept saying they're getting close. Like that talent has to work out at some point.
Right.
I just keep thinking you've accumulated this much talent, and I was just wondering about their division. I'm not sold on the Niners coming back. Seattle's not going to go away. I don't know what to expect in some of these other divisions. I don't know what the Packers are like. You know, the Vikings got a ton of talent. Like, who is that formidable team? You know, do I trust the Saints with Drew Brees, as strange as that may sound? Brady right. going to a super team of sorts. Can they, you know, get it right? I just said, you know, I'm looking at that Dallas team, and I thought, if I don't jump in now, I'm never going to jump in with the Cowboys, because I thought about it last year. I thought they had as much talent offensively as anybody, and they outscore the opposition by over 100 points, and they end up 8-8. I don't know.
And they bring CeeDee Lamb into the – Dan, I think they have a Super Bowl roster, and I've told you on this show in the past about how I thought that – I've always thought Dak Prescott's undervalued in it because he's always available. He plays. He put up the big numbers last year. Now he's got to put up some stuff in January. I don't blame you. I think they're going to win the division. I just don't know defensively. I got to see them step their game up, and they're active. The key is, can you knock Brady around? Can you prevent all those weapons if healthy in Tampa and New Orleans? And you mentioned the 49ers and the Seahawks aren't going away. And what do all those guys have in common? A quarterback just as good as the one in Dallas. I understand why you're going there. It's such a deep NFC. In the AFC, my only well-coached, the Baltimore Ravens are nasty. They got better defensively. They're bullies on defense. Can Lamar Jackson repeat what he did last year? And will you defend him the same? Or does it matter? Is he just so good with his feet and arm now that he's the ultimate weapon in the league because his feet are so good? I wonder how defenses are going to play him, and the Texans get a taste of him next week. Both good choices. I actually chose Tampa beating Tampa, that Brady's great in January, against the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl, Dan. And I chose Tampa, and maybe I'm buying into the hype. I think Tampa's going to give the Saints all they can handle in the division.
All right, let me go around the NFL here real quick.
Okay.
Patriots make the playoffs?
I don't think so. If Cam Newton plays like he did his MVP year, maybe. But they're so depleted on the roster. If they do, Bill Belichick should be the coach of the year no matter what happens. I got Buffalo winning the division, more offensive weapons.
Does Jordan Love start a game this year that has nothing to do with an injury to Aaron Rodgers?
If they're 13-2 and it's the last game of the season and home field advantage is sewn up, other than that, until Aaron Rodgers leaves, Jordan Love will not start a game. This may be a long shelf if they keep Aaron Rodgers. If he's healthy, Jordan Love's going to stand over there and do what I did most of my career, hold a clipboard.
Who has a better chance of making the playoffs, Rams, Chargers?
That NFC West, probably the deepest division. I'm going to still say the Rams, though, even though it's a deep division, and Arizona's going to disrupt the playoff picture. I just think injuries and the Chargers continue. Something's going to happen that's going to – maybe I'm just growing up in San Diego and now them being L.A., and without Phillip Rivers, although Tyrod Taylor protects the ball, I don't think they take enough chances. I think they're going to come up shy. Only one team from the AFC West makes the playoffs.
Who are we talking about first on Monday, Brady or Cam Newton?
Tom Brady, and it won't matter, even if Cam throws for 500, because it's going to be Brady, oh, my gosh, look at the weapons. They are a legitimate February team. Or, oh, my gosh, the naysayers are going to say he threw for a .187. And they lost. Tom Brady doesn't have it anymore. I wish I had Jameis Winston. You'll hear somebody ignorant enough to say that. It'll be Brady, and Brady will have a good game against the Saints. Don't be surprised if they beat him and we start talking, oh, my gosh, at 43 this year. he's an MVP candidate.
Are the Jags tanking?
Yeah, and you can't blame them, Dan. I'm not a big tanking guy in any sport, but if the rules allow it, why wouldn't you? As much as I like Gardner Minshew, you want Trevor Lawrence or Gardner Minshew? It doesn't matter what Minshew does. If they lose, Lawrence will be the pick. And we've seen teams do this before in the past. The Dolphins tried to, Dan. Brian Flores is too good, and they played good football. Yeah, they're doing it because, well, this team is they're giving everybody away. And what Trevor Lawrence does is give them hope. They're tanking, and I don't blame them, although I'm not a big tank guy. I don't see how they're going to win 4 football games this year.
Yeah, and I know people get caught up in this, and actually players get caught up, and they get angry, and they say, we're not quitting. And it's not the players who are tanking. It's the management that tanked. And that's what happened with the Marlins when Derek Jeter comes out and says, you know, I can't believe you're saying this, that we're tanking. Those players on the field are playing hard. And I went, Derek, you put those players on the field, and they're not very good. That's why it's called tanking. It's managerial tanking.
Yeah, you get to control it if you're the front office by saying, hey, Jalen Ramsey, you're gone. A.J. Bouye, you're gone. And we're getting Calais, all those guys that are gone. You think now you're right. You think Gardner Minshew wants to say, hey, man, I'm going to hold this for you until you get here, Trevor Lawrence, so I can give you my job and move on. No, it's a front office tank, and there's no question they're doing it. And who doesn't want the opportunity? Think about the Chicago Bears if they play poorly, Dan, and all of a sudden they're sitting there and you got a chance to get Trevor Lawrence with that defense, how quickly that could turn around. Yeah, the Jacksonville Jaguars will be in that hunt. And Fields ain't bad either, so you're going to get a good second quarterback too.
Hope you have a good weekend. Thank you, bud.
Thank you, and I appreciate you as always. Thanks to the guys, too.
At Sean Salisbury, morning host of the Sean Salisbury Show, Sports Talk 790 in Houston, former CFL legend joining us on the program. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, and you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Dak Prescott had a conversation with Graham Benzinger. By the way, Graham Benzinger, I think I've known him since he was a teenager, and he kind of came onto the national picture where we were looking at this real young broadcaster. And he came to the mothership, he interviewed me there, and it was a really nice story. And I said, you are going to have to prove yourself once you become a grown-up. Like, you know, the novelty of, hey, it's a young guy who's in high school who's doing these interviews. And he was really good at interviewing. And then I said, once you get to the point where the novelty wears off, you have to be great. And he scores some really good interviews and does a great job with that. And he sat down with Dak Prescott, and the Cowboys quarterback had this to say about his brother's suicide.
It's crazy. All throughout this quarantine and this offseason, I started experiencing emotions I've never felt before. Anxiety for the main one. And then, honestly, a couple of days before my brother passed, I would say I started experiencing depression. Didn't know necessarily what I was going through, to say the least. And hadn't been sleeping at all. But for one reason, one night, I sleep the best I've slept. Missing probably 10 plus calls from Tad and giving my dad enough time to come in my bedroom and tell me what had happened. And so I woke up, probably the best night of sleep I've ever had in 2020 from the worst news some of the worst news I'll ever get.
So his brother committed suicide. And look, I'm not here to program somebody else's show. Skip Bayless had some comments that were insensitive about Dak Prescott coming forward and having, you know, these thoughts and going through depression. And if Skip feels that way, that's Skip's show. Skip has to live with those comments. I will say this. I applaud Dak Prescott. You're showing me more as a leader by saying something like this. It doesn't make you less of a leader. Or, oh, you're so vulnerable. You know, how are you going to handle a big situation? You know, you're actually saying, oh, I'm a little bit soft. I can't be your leader. Or however people want to interpret this. Man, it takes guts. It takes balls to come forward. You can't look at this like we did in the 1950s or 1960s. When Paul George came forward, man, I applaud this. And I told you this, I never knew, you know, you had mental issues. When I was growing up, if you said you were depressed, then people looked at you as, man, what's wrong with him? He's got mental issues. Now, if you have depression, clinical depression, you may not know you have it. But to understand what you have, to recognize it, and then get treated for it. Kevin Love, when he came forward. And I went through this because I was in a medical condition I never thought I was going to get out of. And it overwhelmed me because every day I felt horrible. And it was every day I'd wake up, it'd be the same feeling. It was just varying degrees of pain. And you just get down in the dumps. You get depressed. And you know that the next day is going to be the same. And the next day is going to be the same. But if you don't realize it, somebody has to tell you, hey, this is what you're going through. These are things that can help you out of this. And it's a fog. And I don't take it lightly. And I'm sure I did take it lightly when I was growing up, that I didn't understand it. And family members who have gone through this. But for Dak Prescott to say, look, I was in a bad situation. Like, we all understand that. You lost your brother who killed himself. You lost your mother to cancer. He's gone through some pretty traumatic experiences. But I don't know, okay, he didn't practice for a week back in what, February or March? Okay. He doesn't miss games. He's tough. It's a great success story. And we don't applaud that. And I think what happens sometimes is when you go, oh, let me tell you about my depression, you're being selfish for some reason. No, you're not. You're actually sharing. You know when you're selfish? When you don't tell anybody that you're going through this. And that's why I applaud him. Because more people need to talk about this and don't talk about this. I pulled into my garage one day and thought I could leave the car running. You don't think in these moments, but I wanted it to go away. And this won't go away for Dak. It'll always be there. Your brother will never be there for you. So embrace this, appreciate this, and look at that guy as a leader. And I would follow him. And I hope that the Dallas Cowboy players understand what they have. And they have a man as a quarterback. He's not just a robot. He's a man. And to admit that, he's a greater man. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Paulie says he's got stat of the year coming up, not stat of the day. Oh, you folded the paper.
It's that good.
Okay. Do I do this before I get to Chris Fowler?
No, I don't think we make Chris wait.
Really?
Chris is a busy guy. He's got a big job on Monday.
He's got a big job this weekend as well. He's doing the U.S. Open. He's got the men's and women's finals this weekend. And then he makes his Monday night debut. Then that will be alongside Kirk Herbstreit for the Steelers and the Giants as Chris Fowler joins us. Chris, how are you today?
I would have waited, Dan, first of all. You sound like you were excited about something, and then you were less excited when I was coming on. So I would have taken a back seat.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm going to give you the stat of the day. Paulie, do you want to do this so Chris Fowler can decide if this is stat of the day?
I'd like to set up and you to read it. You're a better presenter. But I was watching the replay of the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago, and Jimmy Garoppolo had outplayed Mahomes for 3.5 quarters.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see the stats for both quarterbacks through the first 3.5 3.5 quarters of the Super Bowl.
Okay.
You have it.
18 to 22 for Garoppolo, completing 81% of his passes, 195 yards per attempt, nine, touchdown, interception, quarterback rating, which I hate, 99.8%. Mahomes, 18 to 29, 62%, 172, zero touchdowns, two interceptions, and his quarterback rating was just under 50%. So we proved what there? That Jimmy Garoppolo was really good, except for when they needed him to be really good, and then Mahomes was really good when they needed him to be really good.
Okay.
And there is your stat of the day. See, Chris, aren't you glad that you waited for that?
I liked it. I like you. Okay. You sometimes forget the performances that were great in big stages when the team didn't win. But Mahomes deserves the credit he got. So,
did you do any of his games when he was in college?
We didn't cover Texas Tech when he was there. They were just kind of on the edge of the radar in terms of the biggest game of the week. So I wish I watched him on TV running around. Can't say I saw this when he was at Red Raider, but no, I wish I covered him in college.
Yeah, I would come in on Mondays and I would tell these guys, I had no idea how good he was going to be. I just said he's the most fascinating guy because it looks like he's in the backyard. And, you know, when the quarterback just points for you to go over a certain place, and they played Oklahoma State, and I went, the first half was like 41-38 or something crazy. And I went, I don't know if the guy can play next level, but he is as entertaining as anybody I've seen in college football.
I think fans love it when the rigid structure of football, the regimentation gets tossed out the window and a guy's just out there being an athlete. I think we're seeing that, you know, whether it's Lamar Jackson, whether it's Baker Mayfield, not that they can't operate in the structure, but Manziel, when he was in college, same kind of player. We love it when these improv guys just throw out the window all the rigidity of football sometimes.
Now, there's a few things I want to talk to you about because obviously you cover college football, you cover tennis, you got Monday Night Football with you and Herbie. Let me start with college football. Ryan Day put out a statement basically saying, help us. How can we play football here? Does the Big Ten play football in the fall?
What do you call the fall? I mean, I think it might be ambitious to try to do it at Thanksgiving. I'm so confused by the whole thing. I mean, everybody's confused. He's confused. He's been frustrated from the start, as a lot of the coaches have been. And you know, when you see coaches speaking out against the leadership of the school, that's not normal stuff. It takes pretty radical circumstances to make those guys be not on the same page as the leadership of the conference or the school. I think that they got to do something, but it's going to be so weird, Dan. The playoff, assuming we can continue with this season, fingers crossed, is going to be unfolding in the Big Ten. Perhaps the Pac-12 are going to be kind of cranking things up to play for a conference championship, but not be a part of the – I can't wrap my head around it.
But you're planning on handing out a national championship trophy, right?
I don't do it personally, the handing out. I plan on being in the booth if there's a bracket, but it's going to be the oddest bracket. I mean, I think a lot of sports, you can't say there's an asterisk attached to it. To me, no asterisk at all attached to the NBA champion, the NHL champion, what's going on over here at the U.S. Open. When you put up with all this stuff that we put up as a planet, and you've survived that, handled the mental wear and tear, and won. You got the trophy in your hands, no asterisk. But college football is weird. I don't want to disrespect the effort because I think those players have put up with all the same stuff and dealt with a lot of obstacles as well. But when half the conferences are playing and some are playing later in the year, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, there's going to be a playoff bracket, though. There's too much money at stake not to be at this point.
Yeah, and I felt that way. Like, the Pac-12, it doesn't feel like they're going to even attempt to do the fall. The Big Ten still wants to try, you know, because Ryan Day's got a national championship caliber team and doesn't want to miss out on this opportunity. And if you play in the spring, you know, it's glorified scrimmages there, and, you know, they want revenue, they want the prestige there. And then you look at the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC, and what do they know that these other conferences don't know, or what do they choose not to know that these other conferences know? So there's
a good question. They have different experts. If you ask enough medical experts, you will find some that tell you what you want to hear.
Yes.
I hope the medical experts advising those conferences know what they're doing and they're right. I'm not going to lie to you. When I see the plans to put 20,000-25,000 fans in some of these college stadiums, I know we're going to be on the campuses calling the games. Like, okay, well, I'm going to be really careful when I go there. That's for sure.
You are calling the U.S. Open, the men's and women's final. That'll be coming up this weekend. Let me ask you first about Novak Djokovic here with what happened. I know you weren't calling that, but what do you see in that moment, and did Djokovic deserve to be tossed from the tournament?
Yeah, because rules are rules. And they either apply to him and everyone, or they apply to no one. They showed guts. Reminded me of the Derby. You know, when maximum security crosses the line, people thought they're never going to take down the winning Derby horse. They've never done it before. Then the stewards went and made a decision that they would have made in any other race in a lesser event. And they did the same thing with Novak. I mean, if you're ranked 100 or you're ranked number one and you hit a ball that hits a woman in the Adam's apple, I mean, incredibly unlucky. You could do that 1,000 times and not hit her in the throat and have her go down. And if he didn't hit her, he's going to get away with it. It's just going to be a fine. But the fact that it did strike her, you got to toss him out. They gave him 10 minutes to talk about it on the court. Had there been a crowd there, the crowd would have been going insane.
I know.
It's a clear-cut decision. He snapped. And I think, you know, we all got to be compassionate and understanding. Everybody, whether you're in a bubble or out of the bubble, we're all going through this in our own way. Novak, remember, was a COVID positive test. And he had other guys test positive from that tournament that he put together in Serbia with no mask and no distancing. It's been a tough summer for him. That's not excusing it. He's responsible for that action. But yeah, they had to toss him out.
I was sorry to see Serena get bounced there, because I'm fascinated with her legacy. Like, she's, I don't know who rivals her in any sport with her accomplishments. I don't know. Do we undersell what Serena's done in some way, shape, or form, Chris?
I mean, I live in it all the time in the tennis world, so maybe we take it for granted too much. In 15 days, Dan, she's going to be 39. I think what stings about the loss last night was that, you know, this U.S. Open field was missing some key contenders, including some women that would have been major challengers for her. With them not in the field, with her so close to the final and a rematch with Osaka, and then to be outplayed the last set and a half, I think she's going to be deeply disappointed in that. She didn't play a bad tournament, and she didn't play a bad match last night. Azarenka just came off the canvas after Serena was throwing haymakers in the first set, and she turned the match around. All credit to her. But yeah, when you view it through the Serena lens, it stings. It doesn't diminish anything that she's accomplished, though. I mean, to me, she's still, you know, the greatest women's tennis player of all time.
You got Monday Night Football. How do you approach Monday Night Football differently than you would? Oh, is that your?
I have my chart.
Okay, yeah. How is that different, though, from what you would normally do? Like, you're going to prepare the same way, knowing you.
Yeah, it's different, though. I mean, I got to get up to speed on the rules. I mean, there's fewer players in the roster. It should be easier. Except what you don't have to deal with in college football is the roster fluidity of the NFL. Like, I had a chart 2 weeks ago. I'm ahead. I'm prepared. All of a sudden, they start making cuts and free agent signings. I mean, the Giants secondary is totally different than it looked 2 weeks ago, and that's a key weakness in the team. So it's going to be fun. I mean, Kirk and I, Maria, it's a one-off. Never called an NFL game, so why not do it with – quarantine conditions, Zoom, no practice on the back of two Grand Slam finals. Let's just really, really pile it on. We're going to have a good time. I mean, we're not the Monday night team. And I think Steve Levy and Lewis Riddick and Brian Griesier will have a great season. But we're going to jump in there once. And now I can say I've called an NFL game. And we're going to have a good time with it.
Did you want the Monday night job?
No. I'm really happy with what I'm doing. I feel like I call the Super Bowl every year. I've got 33 years now in college football. It's the 25th consecutive season that Kirk and I have worked together in the fall.
Wow.
Think about that.
Wow.
Whether it's game day or the booth.
Yeah.
And this, it's exactly what I want to do. So, I mean, obviously you don't say no to opportunities, and it's kind of what a coach would say when he's got options. But I love what I'm doing, man. I've always loved college football more than anything else.
The rule aspect is interesting. Like, what are some of the rules that you had to kind of get refreshed in your memory?
I don't even know if I have enough time between now and Monday night to understand what a catch is. I mean, you could write a book on that and people wouldn't get it. But no, just the replay rules. They're always tweaking things, and you want to be really conversant. I'll do the best I can. I mean, the rules is a really challenging aspect, because it's not about thinking about it and remembering what they said in the seminar and going to the book. You got to know it like that. And when you see people, you know, like Al Michaels and Buck and those guys who do this for a long time, it's second nature to them. And, you know, I'll do the best I can, but I hope there's not a bunch of crazy stuff that happens that are the most obscure rules in the fine print on page 903. That would be my worst case scenario.
I hear you're getting into the podcast world.
I am. The call will come for you sooner or later.
No,
it's Jennifer, my wife, and I are co-producers on this. We're working together, collaborating. It's not a sports podcast, but it is going to have a lot of sports people in it. And episode one will drop. Do you say drop?
Yeah.
Is that what you do in a podcast? Is
somebody
like a
just
single?
Dropped something right there, didn't they?
Someone was dropped off camera. It was Jennifer dropping the remote. Yeah. no, I think that we have Willie Geist. our buddy Rich Eisen, Maria Taylor, Jeremy Schapp. So the first podcast is about interviews that went well, interviews that went awful, that were awkward and cringy, and some of them that were triumphant. And it's just people talking about people talking. And it's a double album. It's like an hour and a half. So anybody wants to wade through it, I think will be entertained.
Yeah, I don't know if you get to me, if you're still doing awkward interviews, but my Tanya Harding interview is one for the ages. One for the ages. That
We all have those for the ages, though, don't we? I mean, Eminem is my worst interview. I tell a story about interviewing Eminem in there, and that is it's hard to be worse than that. Tanya, I'm sure, gave you a run.
How did that go, though, with Eminem? Because I saw him in the booth with Brent and Herbie, and it looked like he was kind of playing them a little bit. What
he was on? Kind of playing them a lot, yeah. Mine was a long time ago when he was just an emerging artist. I don't want to spoil the story because I think the way it unfolds is interesting, but it was 100% our fault, 0% his fault. But that didn't stop him from getting really angry. And it never aired, Dan. That's how bad it was.
Oh,
it was on tape, and it never aired. And thank God it never aired.
Do you have it?
God, no. I hope it was bulk erased. But I have the uncomfortable memory of it, you know. And
there are times when Paulie will bring up something, and you go, you know, then they'll bring back, you know, Tanya Hart. I squirm, like I start to sweat because it was.
Was it on this show or was it a sit down?
Oh, no, it was on the show when I was at the mothership and we had her on. And boy, it went sideways quickly. Quickly.
Well, that'll have to be a whole nother episode. We'll have to do part two. You can get on and tell the whole time. I want to hear that story.
Have fun.
There's also a story. The weirdest story in it is that Burt Reynolds and I had a feud late in his life, and he punched me once at the ESPYs backstage at Radio City. I'll lay it out, but it was one of the odder situations that's ever happened. It was Burt was convinced that I said something about him. I did not. Somebody else may have. It was a mistake. It didn't anything. And I tell that story too because,
did he punch you in the face?
I mean, he did not punch me in the face. He punched me hard in the shoulder. You know, he Paul Wrecking Crew from the Mean Machine or Smokey, whatever you like, Cannonball. Right, he threw a mean right hand in the dark. And I thought he was joking, and he was not joking. But yeah, that's in there too.
Judging by the way you're jacked down, look at you. What's going on here, Chris? You know,
I'm natural, as they say, Dan. I like to work out. It's been quarantine. What else is there to do?
Okay, all right. Well, you know, I know your wife used to work out on TV. You know, are you finally listening to her?
Good advice. Wherever you get it is good. Yeah.
Look at that. Put up one of the guns there, Chris.
Come on. No, we will not do that.
Come on.
We're not going to.
Come on,
Dan. You're not getting me to do that.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Have fun this weekend, and certainly on Monday night. And please tell your wife I said hello.
She says hi back. It's going to be a blast. It's going to be like a once in a career kind of thing. And I'm just going to roll with it and try to have a good time and not be stressed. And I think we'll have a blast on Monday, even in an empty house.
Do you have a
Hi.
Jennifer says
hi. Hi, Jen. Do you have a weight belt, Chris?
It's in the closet. I don't use a weight belt.
All right. Good luck. Thank you, bud.
Yeah, buddy.
That's Chris Fowler, ESPN college football tennis host. He's got the U.S. Open coming up this weekend. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. We got a chance to speak to Dodger Hall of Famer Vin Scully yesterday after the show. Hunt Auctions is honoring the great Vin Scully. They're going to have an auction, and it's going to take place coming up in September. And you're gonna be able to bid on some items here. His World Series ring from 1988. You're also going to be able to bid on the scorebook in his last game that he did. Another World Series ring here. President Reagan's signed baseball to Vin Scully is also in there. And I started out the conversation with Vin Scully by asking him how his summer was.
My summer has been hide and seek. The temperatures out here
have been unusually high. Well, our backyard temperature one day was 117.
Oh, boy.
However, my wife and I spend most of our lives now at home, so I could just sum up the summer in two words, at home.
Do you miss watching games or calling games?
You know, I don't miss calling them at all. And I must say, I kind of demand something from the game I'm watching. If it's a very slowly played game, if it's just a long game, I might just turn it off and go to bed. We go to bed reasonably early. So I like to watch them for a while. And right now, it's, for instance, today, or this will be on the air tomorrow, Friday, but today, while we're taping this, we have football coming on tonight. We have the Dodgers playing tonight. We have a basketball game tonight. So we spend our time, my wife and I, bouncing from one sport to another. And on the weekend, we really look forward to watching golf.
Have you ever called a game without fans?
No, never. Maybe reasonably small crowds going back to Brooklyn where you could hear the voices of the individual fans. I remember I had just started with Red Barber and Connie Desmond, and I was really a kid, and there was a famous woman fan. Her name was Hilda Chester, and she had a cowbell, and she worked away all over the ballpark. She was extremely colorful. And this particular day, with a very small crowd, I heard her heavy voice say, "Vin Scully, I love you." And the crowd, whatever there was, kind of laughed. And I lowered my head. And she said, "Look at me when I'm talking to you." That's how small the crowd was one day in Ebbets Field.
But how important is that crowd for you, especially when you're doing a game on radio?
Oh, I loved it. I've told this story many times. When I grew up, about 8 years old, we had a big four-legged radio, and I would crawl underneath it with some saltine crackers and a glass of milk, and I would listen to a college football game, and let's just say it was Alabama-Tennessee. I had no idea who was playing or anything, but I learned to love the roar of the crowd. And if I have a trademark or had, it would be call the play as quickly and accurately as I could, and then shut up and listen to the crowd. And for a few seconds, I was 8 years old again. And someone during one of the World Series games, somebody hit a home run, and I called a home run. And as networks are wont to do, they showed the home run again. And I just shut up. And the columnist wrote, "Perhaps Vin Scully made his greatest contribution by saying nothing." And I really, I took that to heart. I didn't think of it as criticism. I thought of it as, yes, you're right. The best thing I can do when the crowd roars is shut up. There's nothing better.
But to have that self-discipline, because it feels like announcers want to over-call a game, and here you are, having almost a seatbelt on to say, play is over, quiet, let the crowd or ambiance settle in. And it almost feels like it would draw me closer to the game while I'm listening, because I almost lean in more because you're not saying anything.
Yeah, I think, again, it goes all the way back to my love of the roar of the crowd. Probably a couple of the longest pauses while I had an enjoyment of listening to the crowd. One would certainly be Kirk Gibson's World Series home run, and another one was Henry Aaron's record-breaking home run. I mean, what the heck can you say once you've called the home run except sit back and really luxuriate listening to this crowd just be ecstatic? I loved it.
But you were also on the call for the catch with Joe Montana and Dwight Clark. Did you react the same way in a football moment as you would in a baseball moment?
Oh, sure. I mean, if I remember, there was less than a minute to go, and Montana throws to Clark, and the catch is made, and the Niners go out in front. There was still some seconds left for Dallas to come back. But when Dwight Clark caught that, I believe I said, Candlestick is a madhouse, and I shut up. And I just loved it. I got goosebumps, and that was a great part of the job, shutting up.
He's Vin Scully, the Hall of Famer, the former Dodger broadcaster, and now on Twitter. What took you so long to get on Twitter, Vin?
Well, to be honest, when I hung it up back in 2016, I figured I had said enough for a lifetime. But after a while, I realized I didn't really miss doing the game, but I kind of missed hearing from the fans a little bit. And some friends of mine said, you ought to get on social media, and maybe you can exchange thoughts with people. So after listening to some friends for a couple of years, finally went on it. And I don't plan to do anything controversial. At no time will I give an opinion. I will only try to deal in facts, and basically baseball facts, nothing else. So it'll be very low-key, and if something is on Twitter asking me a question, if I can answer it, I'd be more than happy to do it. And basically, that's why, just for the fun of it, I guess you could say.
Vin is also auctioning off some of his personal collection, and this will take place at September 23rd, live internet auction, Hunt Auctions. The Scully collection consists of materials related to his 67-year broadcasting career, starting with Brooklyn and then the L.A. Dodgers. You're going back to the 50s up through 2016. I think the last scorebook that you had, scorecard, is in the auction. Give people an idea what is in the auction and what made you come to this decision to get rid of it.
You know, when one day I was looking at the collection, and it's pretty vast and covers a lot of subjects, and I thought to myself, you know, with the 5 children, 16 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren, it would be better for me, maybe selfishly, to get money from the auction and give it to the kids who have a lot of little ones to educate, as opposed to willing it to them, and then I miss seeing their joy. I'm gone from here. So first of all, I guess it was selfish that I wanted to share in whatever the collection would bring in on the auction. As far as the collection itself, there's the usual things. There's bats and balls and autographs. There's a Japanese tea coat, which is really exceptionally rare. That was back in 1956 when the Dodgers went to Japan. There are several letters from presidents along with signed presidential pictures, which are kind of rare. Give you an idea with the presidents, I had the pleasure of playing golf with number 41, as they call him, George Herbert Walker Bush, the late president. And we had played golf together, and we also played against each other in college. He was the first baseman at Yale, and I tried to play center field at Fordham. And we played up at New Haven. Great game. Yale won. It was either 2-1 or 3-1. It was a very good college game. And so when we were playing golf, I said to the president, Mr. President, as long as you're in the White House, you can say anything you want about your golf career and also your baseball career. But I said, remember, when you step out of the White House, we both went 0-3. Well, he just howled, which is the kind of man he was, and had a lot of fun doing that. So after our golf play, about 3 days later, a man showed up in the broadcasting booth with a little box, and he said, Ben, whatever. I said, yes, sir. He said, a little gift from the president. I said, wow. I said, thank you. And I opened it up, and there was a little note that said, having seen you play, I think you could use a few more golf balls. And in it were 3 presidential White House balls. So there are some tongue-in-cheek remarks from presidents, so they add a little something to the usual collection.
Yeah, I'm looking through. You're giving up World Series rings. I don't know. I might have to open up the wallet here, Vin. I would love to have the scorecard from your final game, but I saw where the estimate is between $10,000 and $15,000.
I don't have any idea. I don't really want to know until it's all over. That way, I won't be falsely elated, and I won't be depressed. I will just gratefully take whatever they give me and immediately turn it over. We're also contributing some money to UCLA, especially for neuromuscular, the so-called Lou Gehrig's disease, and hopefully that'll help. It kind of ties me in with the disease in baseball.
And also, I don't know what that must have felt like when you see all of your memorabilia carted away. Was there one item where you said to your wife, you know what, maybe I should keep that?
No, I never did that. But I'll tell you, the one stroke of, I don't know, memorabilia attack was I was watching them load the truck because everything went back to Philadelphia for safekeeping. Anyway, they were loading the truck, and I was watching calmly, no emotion, and all of a sudden, they brought out my golf clubs. And when they put those left-handed golf clubs in the truck, I realized that was a major portion of my life. I could hear the door slamming and see the clubs go off into the future. Wow. I think that was the biggest twinge that I had of all.
Did you play Augusta?
No, I broadcast Augusta. What would happen is the Sunday, the ball would roll into the cup. The crew, CBS crew, would have a party, and they would play Monday with the Sunday pin placements. Meanwhile, I was fighting traffic on a Sunday night, getting back to the airport to fly wherever the Dodgers were to pick up on the play for Monday. So I never played Augusta, even though I ached to play there. Oh. And a couple of times I was invited to play, but it just didn't work with my schedule. So the answer is a resounding no. But I did play St. Andrews, which was certainly a close second.
Vin, I hope you're well. Sounds like you're doing well. And sorry about your golf clubs, but hopefully you're able to raise some money there. And also a portion will go benefit the neuromuscular research at UCLA. Thanks again for joining us.
Dan, my pleasure to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity, and talk to you again one day.
That's the Dodger Hall of Famer and the live internet auction, September 23rd. That's Hunt, H-U-N-T, Hunt Auctions, 67-year broadcasting career of Vin Scully. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.